I'm going to talk about the an update on the 2018 American Urological Association guidelines for erectile dysfunction. So I have no financial disclosures. And so the new AUA guidelines are hot off the press, just published in May 2018. And this is an update to a 2005 document. They were much more scientifically rigorous and evidence-based in their approach and offer several new and fundamental concepts, which I'll go over, and finally offer an excellent treatment algorithm, which we'll also show at the end of this talk. So erectile dysfunction affects up to 30 million men in the U.S. and 150 million men worldwide. It negatively affects a man's mental health, his relationship, and his general well-being. And for us as practitioners and surgeons, it provides a tremendous opportunity for us to address multiple men's health issues, much of which we're discussing today. The guidelines define erectile dysfunction as an inability to attain and/or maintain sufficient penile rigidity for sexual satisfaction. And guideline statement number 3 is that ED is a risk marker for underlying cardiovascular disease and other health conditions that may warrant evaluation and treatment, and that's a clinical principle. And throughout the rest of this talk, I'll have italicized the guideline statements. The methodology for the guidelines are presented here. They convened a distinguished panel of specialists for a systematic review of multiple databases, searching over 50 years of data, and identified almost 1,000 articles which were reviewed and then graded by the strength of the data, A, for high quality, B, moderate quality, and then C, low quality evidence. And then finally made evidence-based statements of strong, moderate, or conditional recommendations based on the data. Guideline statement number 1, which is a clinical principle, is that men presenting with symptoms of ED should undergo a thorough medical, sexual, and psychosocial history, a physical examination, and laboratory testing. And the history should include age, comorbid medical and psychological conditions, surgeries, medications, family history of vascular disease, and substance use. Risk factors must be assessed for ED, and these include vascular disease, tobacco use, neurological disorders, endocrinopathies, and medication side effects. And the history should include the partner, if possible. Key questions that should be assessed in the office would include symptom onset, severity, and degree of bother, whether this is a problem with obtaining and or maintaining an erection, whether the patient has the presence of nocturnal and or morning erections, whether the ED is situational, for example, occurring only in specific contexts, such as with a partner, and similarly, how are the erections with masturbation, whether the patient has tried prior erectogenic therapies. We should assess stable or progressive symptoms, as progressive symptoms suggest that this may be from comorbid medical problems. Information about changes in libido, orgasm, and penile morphology should be assessed. The physical exam should include vital signs, including blood pressure and waist circumference, an assessment for signs of hypogonadism, and a thorough genitourinary examination. Laboratory testing should include serum BUN and creatinine, fasting lipids, hemoglobin A1C, testosterone, which I'll come back to in a second, thyroid function, and PSA, as well as consideration of psychological factors that include depression, anxiety, and relationship conflicts. So this is new in the 2018 edition of the AUA guidelines on erectile dysfunction, that testosterone should be measured in men presenting with erectile dysfunction. And that's a moderate recommendation, evidence levels grade C. For general treatment principles, guideline statement number 6 states that for men being treated for ED, referral to a mental health professional should be considered to promote treatment adherence, reduce performance anxiety, and integrate treatments into a sexual relationship. And that's a moderate recommendation, grade C. And guideline statement number 7, the clinician should counsel men with ED who have comorbidities known to negatively affect erectile function, that lifestyle modifications, including changes in diet and increased physical activity, improve overall health and may improve erectile function. And that's a moderate recommendation, level grade C. The old paradigm of the guidelines back from the 2005 edition was a stepwise approach. And that is, we talked about first-line treatments, second-line treatments, and then third-line treatment options. Typically, patients were progressed through these as the least invasive to the most invasive treatment options. So we would start with Viagra or Cialis, the oral PDE5 inhibitors, then move to second-line treatment options, which include vacuum erection device, intraurethral pellets such as Muse, intracavernosal injections, and then finally surgery, only reserved for third-line treatment options after all the conservative options had failed. The new paradigm in the 2018 guidelines is one of shared decision making. And so instead of progressing through first, then second, and third line treatments, we now offer all treatment options to all patients, describing the risks and benefits, the pros and cons of each, and then the patient and his partner can determine what's best for them. And this may not necessarily go in the same order as it had, and it may actually go straight to surgery or could include a combination of therapies. Oral PDE5 inhibitors still make a significant part of the guidelines. Guidelines statement number 8, 9, and 10 are all strong recommendations, and these are that men should be presented the option of oral PDE5 inhibitors, including discussion of their risks and benefits, unless contraindicated, that instruction should be provided to maximize benefit and efficacy, and that the dose should be titrated to provide optimal efficacy. Guideline statement number 11, which Dr. Lipschultz already mentioned, states that men who desire preservation of erectile function after treatment for prostate cancer should be informed that the early use of PDE5 inhibitors may not improve spontaneous unassisted erectile function, and that's a moderate recommendation, grade C, and I think is definitely still up for debate. Penile prosthesis implantation is in the guidelines at number 18. It states that men with ED should be informed regarding a treatment option of penile prosthesis implantation, including discussion of the benefits and risks and burdens, and this is not necessarily as a third line option, but may be presented on the initial consult or anywhere along the treatment. Here's the treatment algorithm, which I find to be excellent, and this really summarizes the guidelines well. So we start with counseling the man and his partner, and this involves the value of the relationship support from trained professionals, the importance of lifestyle changes to improve erectile function and overall health, and then the benefits and risk burdens of all the treatment options that are not contraindicated for that patient. And then using a shared decision-making framework, we discuss oral PDE5 inhibitors, vacuum erection devices, intraurethral pellets, intracavernosal injections, and penile prosthesis surgery. And then we identify the appropriate treatment based on the values and the priorities of that patient and his partner. Once a treatment is selected and initiated, we then assess the outcomes, the adverse events, and the satisfaction of the man and his partner. And if inadequate or unacceptable adverse events, or if insufficient satisfaction, then we readdress as appropriate, and that can include dosing adjustments, revisiting instructions, revisiting the values, the priorities of the patient, or considering alternative treatment. And it can go from anything straight from oral PDE5 inhibitors right to surgery. So in summary, the new guideline states that mental health evaluation, involvement of the partner, and advice on the general health and well-being should be considered standard components of the management of ED. A stepwise approach is not always in the best interest of the patient and his partner, and that's no longer the way that we recommend this be treated. The most important part of the guideline is bullet point 3, and this is the most significant update in this iteration of the guidelines, and that's that all patients should be informed of all treatment modalities that are not contraindicated, regardless of the invasiveness or the irreversibility, as potential first-line treatment options. And therefore, patients should select the treatment most aligned with their own goals and their risk tolerance.